From the land to Grand Teut University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of April, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com. We'll discuss the water issues that are related to agriculture and the Western United States with Eric Hunt. He's at the University of Lincoln, Nebraska, and with Extension there. That should be a good conversation about water rights and the Ogallala Aquifer centered in Nebraska, but that feeds the states going southward, including Nebraska, Colorado, Kansas, along with New Mexico and Texas. You'll want to stay with us for that, and then we'll turn our attention to the weather, too. Don Day will be here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org. Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Naomi. Thanks for being with us again on a Tuesday.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's set the stage for our conversation by going through a couple of government reports. Yesterday's USDA crop progress report, let me know what it showed, and then the CONAB numbers from this morning outlining the crops in Brazil.
Yeah, absolutely. So yesterday afternoon, crop progress report said that U.S. corn is now 5% planted. Last year at this time, it was 4% planted, and the five-year average is 4%. Beans are now 6% planted. Last year, they were only 2% planted, and the five-year average is 2%. So still that kind of pace and trend where beans are going in before corn in a lot of areas. Spring wheat, 6% planted, same as a year ago, and the five-year average is 7%. So, you know, nothing is really behind yet as far as planting goes. And as far as the winter wheat crop conditions, they are down a point now, 34% good to excellent. Last week, they were 35%. And these are the lowest spring opening ratings since 2023. So that was why that Kansas wheat market trading a little higher again today. Now, switching over to CONAB, the Brazil numbers that came out. So they have corn production at 139.57 million metric tons. That's up from March, 138.27. Of that, for corn production, they've got second crop corn at 109, so up a little bit from March. And then for soybeans, they upped production. They're now at 179.15. That's up from last month's number of 177.85. So I think that in general kind of weighed on grain markets today, but also for soybeans yesterday, May and July, August, September, November beans posted bearish key reversals on the daily charts. So with the close today lower, a little bit more follow through technical selling. Also crude oil being down today, I think weighed on corn and soybeans a little bit too.
I would like to talk about that as we begin this conversation, because the West Texas, or the WTI, what is normally seen as the American price, down $7, $7.50 for crude oil a barrel today at this hour. Crude oil in the Brent, the world price, $4.84. That's a different spread than we have had. It's down sharply. This despite the fact that the Strait of Hormuz is effectively shut down completely. Is it just taking risk off of the table because there aren't bullets flying? What do you suppose is happening in this process?
Yeah, so what you said, definitely true. But what came out newswire-wise today is that the U.S. and Iran are likely going to be talking again on Thursday. So just that potential hope of maybe something good will come from it, weighed on that market price today. And to your point, not a lot of bad things happening over there in terms of fighting. So some of that war premium taking out as well. But in general, so keep in mind, though, this crude oil market, when you're looking at prices on the board, $80 is really big support. And on the upside, that $120 area is resistance. I mean, it's a $40 range. And we can ebb and flow within that range. You know, every day there's a new element of news coming across regarding the happenings in the Middle East. And we have the potential for this market still to go higher if they can't get things figured out. And it would take a very dramatic peace treaty to make things fall back below $80.
And then turning your attention to the corn and the soybeans directly, as you said, soybeans off just a bit today, some follow through from yesterday. For producers who are going to the field, what are your suggestions to them? Because they will be very preoccupied for the next month or month and a half as it relates to field work. How should they deal with pricing soybeans, old and new crop, if they have the old left, I suppose?
Yeah, so with the beans, they still are at decent value in general, and there is a risk of prices working a little bit lower. And I have to tell you, the more I've been talking with clients over the past couple days here, the more I am starting to hear of some of the smaller producers saying that they are switching to soybeans because the costs are so high for getting the corn in the ground and especially fertilizer. A lot of these guys did not book early, so they are they're facing struggle. So that may be something where the bean market is catching wind of that, and that's part of the reason why it's been working a little bit lower. So it would be maybe okay to be doing some additional pricing opportunities because of this notion of, you know, more global supplies out of Brazil and also the potential for more bean acres planted here. So maybe be pulling the trigger on a few more sales. But of course, as we go forward, there's a lot of U.S. summer weather to get through, and it is still extremely dry in the western plains. They have not had a lot of precipitation there at all, where the eastern corn belt has been getting rain. And where I live in Wisconsin, we are under flood warnings. We have smaller dams in some communities, the older dams that are breaking. And so we have just very two different very big scenarios across the Midwest, just depending on where you live.
And then on the switch to soybeans because of the price of fertilizer, I did make a note from Josh Linville and also from India, which the two are related. India, I think, is about to tender for maybe urea or nitrogen in some form, someplace across the planet, and it appears it may be out of the United States and New Orleans, because there hasn't been a jump, according to Josh, in the price of N per pound there. That would exacerbate some issues in the, particularly, I think, the northwestern part of the United States, potentially.
Okay, and I hadn't heard that, but Josh is a straight shooter. So if he is, you know, talking about some of those types of things, I think that it would definitely be of merit, and it is still a potential risk going forward for sure.
All right, yeah, and that would be, I don't know whether it's completely related to urea. I'm pretty sure that, generally speaking, India uses urea. So, and then I looked at the northwestern part of the Corn Belt simply because yesterday I had a conversation with Frayne Olson, and we were talking about the they use in that part of the world, in North Dakota, urea as opposed to anhydrous ammonia, though I don't think he thought it was going to be that big of a problem there. Again, about 80% of what they need is already on, like much of the Midwest. On the price of corn, what do you see going forward?
So looking just probably for quiet values, but what is interesting to notice is that the spread between December 26 and December 27 corn is actually starting to wake up, where we're starting to see some technical buying on that spread, where folks are looking, we're seeing the December 26 market now slowly start to gain on the 27 market, and that could be part of this need for maybe corn needing to do some last-minute buying of acres, as we are hearing of this shift over to soybeans. And it also could be very much the fact that maybe down the road this summer, producers don't apply as much fertilizer. So corn is aware of that and might surprise us here yet.
That's Naomi Bloom. She's with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Today we're going to take up something a little different. We'll talk about water in the western United States. particularly as it relates to this past winter, the lack of snowpack, the very dry and warm conditions there. We'll begin by discussing the Ogallala Aquifer, which is centered in Nebraska, recharged there really, and runs along the borders between Colorado and Kansas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Texas, going southward. Eric Hunt is now here. He is with University of Lincoln, Nebraska, an extension specialist in meteorology and climatology. Thank you, Eric, for being with us. What can you tell me about the Ogallala as it's related to the Western U.S. and how it is fed?
Yeah. So actually, the main recharge for the Ogallala Aquifer is the Nebraska Sandhills, which are, you know, primarily the north central part of the state. The Ogallala expends really throughout the High Plains. So it gets about Seward, Nebraska, which is about half hour west of Lincoln. So the very eastern side of Nebraska is not under the Ogallala, which is another reason you don't see the irrigation. If you drive east of Lincoln, it basically looks like the ice states. But the Ogallala is a very important source of water, groundwater, for corn and soybean production, to a certain extent, wheat and sorghum production as well in the state. And, you know, the downside, we've had drought on some level here for about six straight years. Now, at times it's gotten better and went away. Last year, we actually had pretty good moisture for most of the summer. So I do think irrigation was less than it probably had been for, say, since 2019. So that was a definite plus for a lot of farmers. And some farmers actually got really good yields on their rain-fed, you know, production last year. That, you know, some people out in central Nebraska may have like some acres in rain-fed, and, you know, the majority in irrigated, and some did pretty well on rain-fed. But I'll also say that the Ogallala does, you know, because we have regulated groundwater pretty effectively in Nebraska since the mid-1970s, we don't have the issues that you do down in Kansas or Texas with, you know, water almost running out. That being said, there are parts of the state, in particular some of the southwest corner. There's the Box Butte County, which is kind of in the northern part of the panhandle. That's kind of a hotbed for commodity crops. I mean, you see more corn, a lot of dried beans or sugar beets. So there's a lot of irrigation in that area that goes on, and we've seen some pretty big declines there in the last 5 to 10 years with more drought conditions. We did see between 2024 and 2025, the latest groundwater report did show that we did see declines in most of the wells, and, you know, I'm going to call it like South Central and the, you know, basically the entire western half of the state. Northeast Nebraska was kind of a positive area where we did see either no real change or did see maybe some slight improvements, and it was, you know, kind of a reflection of how what the late spring and first half of summer 2024 was. But, you know, by and large, this year will put a real strain on water resources in some parts of the state if we don't start getting moisture soon, because if they had to start irrigating on a semi-regular basis in the month of May just to kind of keep things going, then, you know, they are basically going to use a lot more water than they probably want to, or in some cases they're going to be able to, because a lot of the natural resources districts that, you know, they cover our whole state, they're based on watersheds. It's kind of a unique geopolitical system. And some of those districts out west have water allocation restrictions on a 2 or 3 or 4 year period. You know, the upside is some of them probably used less last year, so they may have a little bit more, you know, available water to use this year. But because there are areas where we have seen stronger groundwater declines, they have put on more restrictions. They do meter the wells. And, you know, they maybe face a situation that if they put on a little bit in May, they may not be able to put on as much as they would like to in, say, July and August, and you really need it. So I think you're going to have people making some very tough decisions on how much to actually put on. And if you go further south into Kansas and Oklahoma, Texas, the situation with Ogallala is actually pretty dire. They are probably within about a decade of running out of water in parts of southwestern Kansas and the Texas Panhandle, meaning that they'll either have to revert to try for rain-fed production, or they'll probably have to turn it back to pasture, or, you know, maybe grow something that's less water-intensive in general.
Eric, when you put this into context of long-term climate, how long has the Western United States currently been in drought? And how does that compare, for instance, to the last century?
Yeah, so I mean, most of the Western United States has had drought issues since about the start of the 21st century. Now, there's been periods where things have gotten better. It hasn't been like literally you've been a drought. Like, for example, California, for a little while earlier this year, was completely free and clear of drought and rural dryness on the drought monitor for the first time since 2000. So, I mean, that was blessed. But in general, the Western United States has had a, you know, rough quarter century. If you go back through time, there are clearly been periods where the western portion of the U.S. was pretty dry. We saw that, I think, the 1200s. We've definitely seen that at various points in history. I think what's a little bit different now is the temperatures, you know, just because the planet's warming, at this point at a pretty accelerated rate. We are seeing temperatures hitting thresholds in, say, like the month of March that we've really never seen before in recorded history. And that really affects the hydrologic balance even more. So I would say that some of this is probably part of a natural cycle where, you know, you tend to have more dryness and drought in the western U.S. And that's largely kind of based on what we call the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. It's been what we would call a more negative phase for most of the 21st century. And that essentially means that the water in the eastern half Pacific basin tends to be cooler than the western half. And then over time that, you know, you see that shift over decades. But we have noticed also that behavior of the Pacific Decadal Oscillation has been changing more in the last couple of decades. And, you know, it's led to a bit more, you know, what we call hydrologic whiplash, where you do see, you know, periodic spells of big improvement, then, you know, rapid degradation of drought. And that's kind of something that we're seeing in other parts of the world as well. But, you know, I think a warmer planet really does compound issues in the western U.S. because they are inherently more semi-arid. It's easier to heat up dry air than it is heating up moist air, which is one reason that you guys, you know, you don't hit 100 degrees as often as we do in parts of Nebraska, because you have, you tend to have more humidity, and it's just fundamentally harder for it to get 99, 100, 104 degrees in, say, central Illinois, unless you guys are really mired in a pretty deep and bad drought. You know, it's easier to obtain in, say, western Nebraska, where it's, you know, more semi-arid. So I think the prognosis for the West is actually pretty concerning. I'm hopeful at some point, you know, if we do see some natural cycles tip back into where it does get at least a little bit wetter in the West, that at least maybe helps offset some of the hydrologic issues. But I think we're probably headed for some really challenging times ahead for states like Arizona and Utah and Colorado and California. And, you know, if you think about where populations have generally been migrating for the last, you know, 20 to 50, 60 years, they tend to be migrating toward places that have more water risk and more climate risk in general. So, you know, my advice is, if you don't hate Illinois, stay there.
This will be a political issue going forward into the western United States. Water rights are already a political issue. I can only imagine those discussions have already begun to take place.
Yes, and I think that the western U.S. has been a bit more proactive about trying to get ahead of this. But, I mean, I still think there's going to be some very, very challenging conversations between states and, frankly, within states. I mean, certainly within California, you've long have had issues between, you know, water rights for agriculture, which, you know, they grow a lot of crops that we rely on in the rest of the country that are not either easily reproducible or can't be grown. So, I mean, I think that's going to be a challenge. Certainly, we've had some important agricultural areas in Arizona that, you know, just seem to be drier and hotter. So I think that you're going to see some real political issues within the western U.S. in the coming years and decades, just based on, you know, water rights. And, you know, water is probably going to be, if not literally more scarce, I think it's going to be more and more volatile and unreliable just because of climate change. And I do think that is going to extend into, you know, our portion of the country. Maybe not so much where you guys are probably, you know, I think a little safer. But I think for Nebraska, we're going to have some real challenges coming forward here the next 20, 30 years as we see, you know, more erratic winters. And, you know, this past winter, I wouldn't say was not becoming a new norm, but our past 4 months were the warmest and driest on record by a landslide. I mean, there's nothing in the 100 years that looks like this last, you know, 4 months looked for Nebraska. I think the same is true for a lot of the western U.S. So if we have these winters, we're not getting snow cover and we have ground that's thawed. We were losing moisture in the winter that we necessarily can't afford to lose. And I think that just makes puts us in a precarious situation going into a spring. If we have a majority of the state, especially the areas that are more heavily irrigated, if they just don't have the moisture, I think it just puts more and more pressure on irrigation. And, you know, if that aquifer, if you'll go out of the aquifer, starts becoming more and more stressed, at some point you have to start thinking about maybe diversifying our crop rotations, which I'm generally in favor of anyway. But, you know, I think that, you know, the next 10 years are going to be pretty interesting in terms of how we see things happen politically within states and between states, and probably in some cases between countries with regards to water resources, water access.
Thank you much. I appreciate it. We look forward to talking to you again sometime in the future.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
That's Harry Kant. He is an assistant extension educator of agricultural meteorology and climate resilience at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Sunday, a day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming now joins us to take a look at the forecast for the United States. The growing regions from the Western Plains all the way through the Eastern Corn Belt. Hi, Don. Thanks much. What can you tell me about the weather so far and the upcoming week?
Well, over the last couple of weeks, a recurring theme has been for most of the precipitation in the United States to be clustered from Texas through eastern areas of Oklahoma, Kansas, parts of Missouri, then into parts of the northern and western Corn Belt. And that's exactly what we're going to see for another week, as the pattern's been kind of stuck, as there's been a pipeline of moisture coming up from those lower latitudes from East Mexico through the center part of the country. And we're going to see significant rain, amounts that are going to be as much as 1 to 3 inches over the next 7 days, over a good portion of Iowa, Wisconsin, parts of Michigan, the northern counties of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. And some of that rain will also get into Missouri, East Kansas, East Oklahoma, and a good part of central and eastern Texas. We continue to fight dryness in the Dakotas. While there will be a little bit of shower activity getting into North and South Dakota, we're only going to see the extreme eastern counties of Nebraska in that area get into some rain. So we're looking at the areas who have been getting wet, continuing to get wet. The areas who have been drier will continue to be drier. And while we see this for another week, the week after this, we may see the dynamic change a little bit, and some of those western areas may start to see better opportunities for precipitation.
Hey, thank you much, Don. Don Day is with Day Weather. He's in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org, where you can look into the calendar of events today. And if you scroll down and or hit the schedule and move over a couple of dates, you'll find on April the 30th a webinar that the Farm Doc team will be hosting. I'll be there too, as it's related to managing cost and farm budgets. It's something you'll want to listen to online. You can do that at YouTube after the fact, or you can ask questions live during that webinar, but you need to be signed up. Do that right now at willag.org. Look for the farm management webinar on the 30th day of April. It's absolutely free. You have a great afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.